Well, how you doing? Zach Kostin,
TJ Laramie,
Adam Henrique,
Joe Siddle, Megan
Augusta, Tom Crawford.
Holy Mackinac, you're listening to Wind City Sports.
What up, everybody, and welcome back to the Wind City Sports Podcast, Windsor's only local sports podcast, presented by Amishburg Chevy Buick GMC. Windsor's only local sports podcast, hosted by yours truly, Drake Damore, every Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere podcasts are found, featuring interviews with local athletes, coaches, entrepreneurs, and more. Something unique and different every week here on the Wind City Sports Podcast, going strong for 5 years now, over 5 years. You're easy to find on any podcast platform and social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at WinCity underscore sports, WINCITY, all one word. So give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it may be. Give us a review or rating on any app you might use or podcast platform you might use. And tell your friends and family and teammates about the WinCity Sports Podcast. But today is Monday, March 28th, 2022, and it's episode 249 of Wind City Sports. Today on Wind City Sports, we have a University of Windsor alum, originally from the East Coast, Nova Scotia, East Coast lifestyle, as we'll talk about for sure, and came to Windsor to be part of the University of Windsor's track and field team for shot put. And after her career, during her time here in Windsor and past, competing for the national team, has made it to the Olympics this past summer. Our guest this week is Sarah Mitten, joining us on the podcast pretty shortly. We're going to talk about growing up out in the East Coast, coming to Windsor, being recruited here, kind of getting into the sport too at a young age, and obviously doing what you got to do to get recruited to a university for a sport. And again, competing for the national team, going to the Olympics, that Olympic experience, and what she's been up to since, what she's doing now, and what the future might hold for her. We're also going to talk about the new Track and Field League of Canada. Some pretty cool stuff for all our track and field athletes. So we're going to get into that interview in a bit. Before that, we'll talk a little bit of sports news, get you caught up with our Spitfires, who are on a complete tear right now, just rolling past pretty much anyone that's in front of them. So we'll talk about that probably at the beginning of the show. And then later on, we have lots of stuff to talk about with our Windsor Express, St. Clair Saints as well, bouncing back in the CCAA championships, going to the finals actually today. So I'm going to have to look that up in the latter half of the show and get you guys caught up. Recording here on Sunday. You guys are listening on Monday, hopefully. But we're going to talk about that stuff, and then we're going to get into our interview with Sarah Mitten. But before that, I got to tell you about Amishburg Chevy Buick GMC, the official sponsor of the Wind City Sports Podcast. Amishburg Chevy Buick GMC has extended their holiday deals into the new year, and they have great deals on the new 2022 Buick Enclave and amazing deals on used cars, including the used 2022 Chevrolet Silverado and the 2021 Chevrolet Suburban. And don't forget about the 2021 GMC Sierra. They got something for everybody at Amishburg Chevy Buick GMC, located on Sandwich Street South in Amishburg. Tell them the Wind City Sports Podcast sent you. They're proud to serve all drivers throughout Amishburg, Windsor, Kingsville, LaSalle, and beyond. They believe in providing top quality service to everyone that walks through their doors, and that includes assistance with picking out a new ride, financing it, and keeping it in top quality condition. The official sponsors of the Wind City Sports Podcast and the upcoming annual Ed Jovanovski Golf Tournament, Amishburg Chevy Buick GMC on Sandwich Street South, or check out the virtual showroom on AmishburgGM.com. So let's talk a little bit about our Windsor Spitfires to get the news rolling today on the podcast. Approaching the end of the season, about 3 weeks left, they are on an absolute tear. Yesterday, Sunday afternoon, most recently picking up a win over the Sioux Greyhounds, a close battle in a 5-4 final. Daniel D'Amico and Wyatt Johnson both picking up a pair of goals, with Johnson's being the game winner. This helps our Spits secure that top spot in the Western Division with 82 points, 5 over the Flint Firebirds. Current record of 38-16-3-3 on a complete tear right now. Let's get you caught up with the last couple games. So with 4 games in this last week since the last time we talked, they went 4-0, kicking things off on Tuesday at the WFCU Center. They beat Kitchener 7-5. Then Thursday, again at home, Saginaw Spirit down 8-5 to the Spitfires. Saturday and Sunday they had a both games in Sioux, a doubleheader with the Sioux, beating them in game one 5-3, and as we just talked about, 5-4 yesterday. Coming up next, we have a Thursday night game at home at the WFCU Center as they'll welcome the Sarnia Sting for a 7:30 game. And then following that, Friday, Saturday, they'll be on the road in Kitchener in Owen Sound. After a bit of adversity this year, I'm really looking forward to the playoffs, just a little bit. I mean, at the beginning and maybe mid-season, there were times where, you know, they weren't as consistent, but just running away with it the last couple months and the perfect time to do it. I'm really excited to see what they can do in the playoffs this year. But we'll see if there might be a little bit more hockey news to talk about later on in the show. Again, we're going to talk about the Windsor Express on a losing streak there, but St. Clair Saints basketball, men's basketball, back to their winning ways in the championship game. We're going to get I'm not even sure what happened, so we're going to get caught up in that one together, live, in person. And lots more news to talk about too, just some cool stuff about some local Windsor athletes. So we'll get into that after our interview with Olympian and University of Windsor alumni, shot put thrower, Sarah Mitten. Here we go.
All right, so I'm now joined by an individual originally from Brooklyn, Nova Scotia. This University of Windsor alum, known as one of the world's shortest elite shot putters and a 2021 Olympian, Sarah Mitten. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. This is awesome to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I seen your reaction to my intro. That I actually got right from the Team Canada profile. So I
didn't know. Oh, really?
Oh, I didn't know it.
No, I haven't seen that. I'll have to go take a look.
I didn't know, you know, if what they were alluding to. But nevertheless, first off, you're out in California now, right? So what's going on recently since the games?
Yeah, since the games. I mean, we shut down a little bit afterwards, kind of rest, recharge. But with the postponement of the games last year, or sorry, in 2020, yeah. This upcoming 2022 season was pretty jam-packed. So didn't really get the break that I think we were all looking for. But so now just here in California, preparing for World Indoor Championships, which are in about a week, which kind of catching me off guard as I say that now, as I'm on the opposite coast. But preparing for World Indoors, and then this outdoor season is jam-packed. We have World Outdoors in July, Commonwealth Games, and NACAC Championships on top of just like the regular track and field schedule, so lots to look forward to.
Yeah, so you're busy, obviously. But yeah, like you said, you're out there now. You've been around, I mean, from the east coast of Canada, so humble beginnings, I'm sure. You know, growing up out east, what was it like growing up out there for you?
It's good. I definitely love the fact that I grew up out east. I don't think I'd want it any other way. The way that I grew up and the way that I got into sport was, like you said, just like humble beginnings. You know, I didn't have everything I needed from the start, but I think that's what got me most intrigued in sport. Like seeking out those opportunities and making those moves, I think it forced me to grow and grow up really quickly in the sport. So it was, you know, even though I wasn't the best, it was, you know, moving to Ontario to pursue track and field because track and field out east just wasn't as developed as it is now, and I think it's still growing, but so I had to make a move to go if I wanted to, you know, pursue track and field on a bigger level. So every time I think about it, I don't think I would have grown up any other way, and I'm not sure I would have found where I was going if I had grown up somewhere else.
That's for sure. I mean, sometimes, you know, when it's not like at your fingertips or you're not exposed to everything, you got to get yourself there, right? So obviously that's exactly what happened for you. Never like to assume anything, but, you know, coming from out east, that's why I said humble beginnings, simple East Coast lifestyle. We went out there out east around Christmas time. I got myself some gear, and now the Wind City Sports Podcast is an affiliate of East Coast Lifestyle. So
I saw that. That's so cool.
Yeah. So I didn't think of it until talking about it now. I was like, yes, we got to bring that up.
Yeah, I have some East Coast Lifestyle gear of my own, actually. When it first came out, of course, it was like, hot commodity, and I ended up getting myself a sweater, and then I actually got one for Christmas this year because I didn't make it home for Christmas, so I got sent that, so it was like a little piece of home all the way in Toronto, so it was nice.
Yeah, it's the perfect home gift and cool stuff too. I mean, that's one thing why I like it, bought all my stuff and do the affiliate programs, because it's just, they're actually cool material or gear, right? So why not? But you know, of course, you know, you're well, actually, before we get into, you know, kind of specializing in shot put and stuff, did you do a lot of other sports growing up? I mean, obviously, you know, I can't imagine you start doing shot put at an early age, right? So
Yeah, definitely. I played a little bit of everything. I think, you know, when I got to middle school, that's when I really decided that, like, I was an athlete. Like,
yeah.
Growing up, like, played like little kid soccer, like that kind of stuff. But really found my way in sports. Like, it was definitely like something to like get a lot of my energy out. And I think my parents really liked that. But once I got to middle school, it was kind of like anything going, and it was, you know, just a way to keep busy. And growing up in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, there wasn't a ton going on outside of school, so kept me out of trouble and kept me active. So I think, like, I mean, I did, you know, soccer, basketball, volleyball. I played badminton, a little bit of table tennis,
cool.
Literally just like whatever was going. We had like a little core group of girls in my small school, and we just rotated through the sports. So didn't really find chocolate until it would have been grade 7, grade 8 year. There was actually a girl in my hometown who was a thrower and she was getting ready to go to FSU in the States. So she had kind of like brought that to the attention of the school, that was even really like an event in track and field, and kind of picked it up from there.
Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, that's the way that it usually goes down too, right? Especially probably coming from where you're coming from, just seeing that someone can do this, you know, inspires you to do something similar. And I was going to ask, you know, again, you know, you don't start doing shot put at a young age. So like, I was going to ask, you know, how you kind of got into it, or any sort of track events, I guess, and, you know, kind of alluded to it just now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, track was just same as I mentioned, like I just kind of fell into it. It was kind of like that, you know, spring summer sport. You got a couple days off school. All you had to do is jump over some hurdles and jump into the sand pit. So I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, right off the bat, like all of that came pretty naturally to me, especially like in my area. I did really well. And then it was the second year that I had done track was when I had seen kind of this other girl, Chelsea Whalen, throw the shot put. She was throwing the javelin. I was like, okay, I understood it, but still didn't really have someone to like teach me how to do it. She was a few too many years ahead of me in school. So a coach came over to me and kind of said, you know, I kind of see this in you. Maybe you should give it a try. And so I was one of like the only girls throwing at the school at the time, but I went over with the boys at the little shot put pit, and you know, nobody really knew what we were doing. Like,
yeah.
We tried our best, and I ended up going to a meet just shortly after that. And I broke like a small local record. It wasn't actually Chelsea's, but just some record that had been standing for a few years or however long. And there was a coach there from Bridgewater who is one of my like, yeah, my godsends and reasons that I think that I'm in track and field right now still. She came like running up to me after and was like, who is that? And I need her to throw, like the most excitable woman I'd ever met. And she's like going off about joining a track team, throwing full time, like how great I was at this already. And it was like, just so excited. And I was just kind of like completely overwhelmed because this is like day 5 throwing shot put, just like, okay. You're like, you want me to like full time throw this little ball? Hadn't really fallen in love with the sport yet, but I was intrigued with how excited she was. And that's what kept me, you know, that's what got me to the track and field club in Bridgewater and then kept me in it the whole way through.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, if someone's inspiring you or encouraging you to do something, especially at a young age, I mean, like you said, you must have been in middle school at that time, right?
Yeah. I was just young. So I like didn't really know what I was doing. Didn't really obviously know the potential that was there.
Yeah.
So her being excited really was like, okay, like she thinks I'm good at this. I'm kind of, you're kind of getting it back. And it was, yeah, it was fun that way.
So interesting stuff. Cause I was going to ask, you know, I figure by at least high school, you know, you'd develop your skills and are doing it more full time. But I wanted to ask if there was anything outside of school, right? Here, a lot of times people just do it high school level or whatever. And, you know, whatever happens from there happens from there. But there's clubs, like you mentioned, there's leagues and stuff like that. So you were obviously deeply involved pretty much from the beginning, I guess, if they pretty much recruited you, right?
Yeah, pretty much from the beginning, I took like the club route, the whole, like, it was almost like from 0 to 100. Like I went, you know, have never thrown a shot put to, I then joined a track and field club like a week and a half later. And then a few months later, I attended like the Legion National Championships in Ottawa. So it was just like a really quick turnaround with like even like finding out about the sport to obviously, you know, doing it full time. I mean, I still played a lot of other sports, but track became like my number one priority, mainly just because my mom told me basically if she was going to drive me to Bridgewater, which was about 45 minutes away from my house, that I had to be fully committed. So I think that helped a little bit. I was like, okay, she's going to take me, but this is now my sport. So that was really cool. But yeah, outside of that, like pretty much did it full-time in school and then kind of on the side,
yeah,
outside in the club world since the beginning, which was nice.
Yeah, because it's such a unique thing, you know, unique sport, I guess you can say. I mean, all the track and field too, right? So, you know, like I interview hockey players, basketball players. It's the same route, you know, almost in the same way. But mm-hmm. in a sport like this, you never know, right? So interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, I feel like everyone really gets into sports similar ways. Like I heard a lot of stories about, you know, a high school coach picking someone and being like, hey, you should try this. And like, it sounds very similar. But yeah, like you said, with a niche sport, like, you know, hockey, basketball, like there's kind of that team aspect that you can get brought into. And like I found with shot put, like one-on-one, it was like me and that coach almost through and through. Like we'd have a few people in and out every couple of years who wanted to give it a try, but it was definitely like an independent sport, especially being like one of the only throwers in like the eastern zone of Nova Scotia. So that was a big part of it, right? Like had to either love it or love the idea of it. So yeah. That's kind of kept me in it.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, that kind of, you like that, you know, that interested you to be an individual sport athlete. And again, you know, just almost being recruited, being pushed that way. Again, in a unique sport like shot put or anything in track, might feel a little weird, but it's like they see something in me. This must be good, right?
Yeah, and she had coached a few other, like she was involved with help coaching like Chelsea at one point, the girl from my high school, and like a few other throwers. So it was like, okay, like you can see what they had done. And like, yeah, it kind of gave me like the insight that, you know, she could get me to like a university level. Like at that point, I don't think anybody, I'm not sure we really saw like Olympian in the future. And I'll say that like for sure about myself, like every time when I started track and field, it was very like step by step. It was, you know, I started it, hey, this is cool, like I can make Team Nova Scotia, do this like provincially. And then it was, hey, I can actually go to university for this. And then after university, it was like, maybe I can make the national team. So it was never like I picked up the shot and I was just so much better than anybody else. It's just been like a really slow grind to the top.
Yeah, like you said, you know, you did the work, and like you realize that too from an early age, you know, like, well, if my mom's going to drive me, I gotta commit, right? So that's it all right there. And coming from an elite group, you know, pretty much out east, right? Like you said, there wasn't a big community of people doing this, right? So, you know, that being said, you know, at home, high school and all that, I can only imagine you're doing all those events like you mentioned. And then, you know, maybe you start to get recruited. How do you end up in Windsor? Is there a lot of offers, or how did that go down for you?
Yeah, it kind of took a few twists and turns. In high school, I actually deviated and tried to do the heptathlon for about a year and a half, 2 years. So that kind of took away, I think, from my potential to go to the States, because I had missed out on like competing specifically in shot put for like about a year. So I had some marks just from like within the heptathlon, but in my grade 12 year, I came back to it. So by the time that, you know, looking for a school came around, and I had really like decided that I was going to be a thrower instead of just a track and field athlete, it kind of caught me off guard. Like things started coming up really, really quickly. I had a couple of like small offers to the States. We were exploring that route, but I think I was just too lost in the sauce. Like there was a lot of stuff coming at me and I didn't have a lot of guidance at the time. And I was more so worried about making the wrong decision. And I had heard a lot of, you know, those horror stories from the States of your coach leaving, or, you know, you go to the States, throwers get hurt. So I actually like had a lot of good direction in the Canadian realm. Like I know Jesse Drennan was actually from my track and field club, and he was a university athlete at Windsor at the time. So that's where that connection came from for me, like Jesse always came home with such like positive things to say about the university and like the Lancer family and everything. So in my grade 11 year, we had gone up and taken a visit, loved it, felt really at home. And that's like very cheesy to say, because it's so much about what like the culture is there. Like, like as soon as I got to the track, like everyone was just so welcoming. And from a small town coming into that, I was like, wow, this feels so good.
Yeah. And you know, like you said, that's the, you know, hashtag Lancer family. But not to put down any other sports as well, but it's like the track and field team is it's big. And like you said, it's just like a big family.
Yeah. And it's got that reputation, right? Like,
yeah,
I felt safe in that decision. And that plus like everything that you feel when you go to school, like it's hard to describe when you feel at home somewhere, but it was just everything seemed to align and I kind of knew.
Yeah, absolutely. And still young at that point too, right? Like still a young kid going, starting this journey, and things started going pretty, again, quickly for you. I guess it never really stopped. As you come here 2014-15 year, school year, and then it must have been probably following or during that school year was the Pan Am Junior Championships, you know, mm-hmm. right off the bat, finishing fourth in that event. So I'm sure that was something crazy. Again, maybe another eye-opener, right?
Yeah, that was definitely an eye-opener. I know when I came into Windsor, I was quickly ranked in like the top shot putters in like the OUA and USWR, which was kind of an eye-opener for me. I mean, again, never one of the best, like always amongst, you know, the group, especially in Nova Scotia. It wasn't until my grade 12 year that I actually won a championship meet. But yeah, coming into Windsor, ranked really well, kind of really missed that first U Sport performance. You know, it kind of gets to you, like the nerves. Again, such a young shot putter and very inexperienced. I had a couple of fouls and missed a couple of throws, but yeah, that following year was really, or that following summer was really an eye opener with the Pan Am Games experience, because I had never made like a national team of any sort, particularly the last couple of years before that. I had missed out by just like mere centimeters on a couple of like the world youth teams and world junior teams. So to make that and then go in and have a personal best of the meet, I think it kind of helped me regain some confidence going in to the following years as a Lancer.
Yeah. I mean, again, just looking at it on paper, it's like, that's what it seems like. Again, it's your first year and fuck, it's a pretty big accomplishment right off the bat. So that being said, like we talked about that, you did the Pan Am Games in Peru, world champions in Qatar. However you say it, Japan you've been to recently. So before we even get there, California, being able to travel the world through this game must be pretty cool. And what I always say, perk to the job, right?
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. I know my parents every day are like, wow, your life is so tough. You know, like, I think I've probably been to like 32 countries already, and specifically Shawput's just a really cool one because it's a really small community. So once you kind of get in there, you can, you know, you get to go to all these meets all over the world, whether or not they're with, I mean, all the ones you listed were with like the national team for the most part, but yeah. I mean, the other ones were just like small invites to meets all over the place. So it's been really cool that way. Like, I mean, I always tell my parents, like it's a lot of tracks, hotels and airports, but there is the odd gems outside of that. Like we've, you know, we get to travel and see a few things while we're there. So it's,
yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah, even that's the thing. Of course, you're not, you know, going to the beach all day or whatever, right? But being outside in this shot put environment, like some of the videos you posted, even from obviously from Japan too, it's just like, wow, you know, you get to like see your view and stuff. You get to see some beautiful places.
Yeah, that's been probably one of the best parts of the journey so far.
I can only imagine. And, you know, so we talk about all the events that you've done. And still doing it, still going through, the ranks basically. And now you're out in California, so I wanted to talk about, you know, kind of all the places that you, well, kind of you alluded to. I'm sure there's like cool facilities and places that you've been able to drop into, even if it's just for a day, and get some great experience training with high level athletes.
Yeah, it's been really cool. I mean, the thing that comes to my mind the most is, in 2020, right before the world shut down, we were in New Zealand trying to qualify for the world, or sorry, for the first Olympic Games. So I was there with my team, and we were there for about a month and a half. And when we had booked the trip, all I could think about was that I was going to be competing against, you know, Valerie Adams, who is like the dame of women's shot. She just announced her retirement. She's got like, I don't even know, like she's won like four or five consecutive outdoor titles, Olympic champion, has like five meets at the Olympic Games. And she had just come back from having a baby and was preparing to compete at the Tokyo Olympics. So I was really looking forward to just meeting her, not competing alongside of her. She was someone who, when I first started getting into shot put, like I watched her at like the 2016 games and I was like, wow, she's so good. Like I was throwing like 14 meters. I was like, she's throwing like 22. So just like contrasting difference. And then I went to one of the first meets in New Zealand and definitely had like one of those fangirl moments. And then my coach was like, listen, like you're competing, like you're in the same meet. It's not, you're not watching this. And I was like, okay. And for a little bit, I was beating her. And then she ended up winning in true Valerie fashion. And then at the following meet, I actually ended up beating her for the first time. And it was just like a full circle moment for me, like watching Admire come in the track world and then being able to compete with her, being actually able to compete with her and beating her. And then I actually have a picture of her like hoisting me up on the podium. Awesome. So I'm like, it was, yeah, one of those cool moments in sport where you're like, wow, this is really why you do it.
Yeah, special moment. And again, ties to you, right? Like you see a lot of those sappy stories around, but again, not a lot in your field, right? So it's cool. Like you would never kind of guess that looking at some track athletes that they look up to someone that's still competing, especially in the Olympics, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the cool thing I think about shot put is like it's such a long-term sport. Like you said, like at the beginning, like you're so young and I still feel like I'm a young shot putter at 25.
Yeah.
But some of these women who are competing and doing their best are close to 40 now. And so you can be somewhat admiring them and then get to that level where you're then competing against them on their way out. So it's, yeah, it's just really cool.
Yeah. I didn't realize the longevity in the sport, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. Again, that's why we do this and why, you know, we got to put it out there and, you know, get the exposure, you know, you've had, and speaking of exposure, I mean, you've had a lot of opportunities to get noticed and stuff like that. And you talked about qualifying for the Olympics. Wanted to go over that a little bit. I mean, qualifying for the Olympics, if I'm not mistaken, in front of one of your heroes, big deal or not, you know?
Yeah, it was a pretty cool experience. I remember, I think I was more focused on the fact that I had just thrown further than her and won the meet than I did that I really qualified for the games.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just like a finally moment. Like I had actually, into speaking of qualifying, I guess, I had a really good season in 2018, my first year with my coach. And at the end of the season, after learning how to rotate, so completely switching my technique, it really like clicked. And I ended up going to a meet in Pennsylvania and my PB at the time was 1780. And I ended up throwing like 1852 that meet. And that would have been like what was over the Olympic standard for the coming year. So it was one of those moments where you're like, oh crap, like, did I just do that? But it didn't count because we were so far out from the game. So then I then spent like 2 years trying to catch up to that moment. So it was like, I knew I could throw it. I knew I had like the potential to qualify for the games, but it just like wasn't happening. But things were, they were like trending in that direction, but I couldn't get the mark. And so it was that moment for us was like, okay, like finally, like you finally did it.
Well, and then as soon as it hit, that one moment, right? So
it does. And thankfully in track and field, you do get quite a few of those opportunities to, you know, achieve the standard. But yeah, it was one of those moments where it's like, okay, I can breathe.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it's like. Like once you punch your ticket, right? It's like, do you even realize it right when it happens? Like, you know, it's like, did I win kind of thing, you know? And it's crazy when like you talked about, you know, 2018 kind of changing your game. That's like pretty much when you had wrapped up your OUA youth sport career. And so it's crazy to think like how long you could be doing something and how much there is to still learn and improve. And like you said, you feel like you're a young shot putter at 25, and that attests to it right there, you know?
Yeah, I think I think that's really cool because, yeah, through my Windsor experience, I mean, every year I kept getting better and better. So there was nothing to ever be upset about. But I was actually a glider, and I don't know if you know a little bit about shot put. There's like the two different ways to throw it, I guess. So the glide technique and the rotation. And it was really like all through university sport, we just continued to work on the glide. It was what I knew. I was still doing well. I was still progressing. So we kind of just, you know, stuck with it. And then as soon as I finished university, I started working with a coach in Toronto. And he basically told me if I wanted to take it to the next level, I had to rotate because I was too short.
And well, that's where it comes from.
That's where it comes from, because in order to really do like the glide technique, you really need to be this like really big, strong girl, like, or really tall, at least like the height factor factors in a lot more. And he was like, listen, I think you got it, but we got to do something different. And I was like, it's my current coach now. And I was like, Richard, I've already been doing this for like 8 years. I'm pretty nervous to start again. And the cool thing is it didn't really feel like starting again, because everything that I had already done still factored into the throw. It was just like, it took me over a year to figure it out again. Yeah. So it was like a lot of ups and downs along the way, but I don't think I'd be where I was if I hadn't switched techniques. So,
yeah. I mean, obviously he's seen that in you, and that's sometimes what it takes. And I didn't even really know what they meant when they say what's the deal of being a short shot putter? I don't get it. Right. But to kind of talk about, you know, the differences between the two, I guess, I mean, like you were talking about, I guess, like, is the glider more just like explosive and the rotation is what? I don't really know how to compare it, I guess.
I guess for the glider, so it's like a lot of physics, right? Like throwing a ball, throwing a javelin, anything like that. It's like all about like the physics equation, basically, of like how far the object can go. Okay. So height and velocity have a lot of factors. So if you can't have the height, you got to have the velocity. And then so with the glide technique, it's a shorter ball path. So you're just kind of doing like a little hop backwards. So it's a very linear event. And so it takes a lot of force to move a ball over a shorter distance, basically. So having the height really helps. And then with the rotation technique, what it does is it gives you a longer ball path. So you have a longer time to push on it. So it kind of takes away the height factor if you're equally as explosive, pretty much. So it just gives you a little bit more time to create power. And we do notice that a lot more of the shot putters who spin or rotate are a lot shorter. So yeah, it's definitely a way to make up for it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't realize that, right? So you got to compensate with what you got, with what God gave you, I guess. Right. So, but it's cool to, you know, learn about the sport a little bit as well. But obviously the grandest stage of them all, the Olympics, we got to talk about it. I mean, it had to have been a frustrating year, like you said, with it being pushed back a full year. But first and foremost, let's just talk about like the experience itself and like the village and again, going to Japan.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were upset that it was a COVID year. Particularly, I noticed like athletes who had already made the games, they knew like what to compare it to, right? Like, I kind of knew what it was like before COVID. And for me, by the time the games rolled around, like we'd been living in COVID for almost a year and a half. So it was really easy to kind of be like, well, this is just normal. And then Japan did do a really good job of making sure inside the village, at least, felt normal. I mean, the main differences I think we noticed were like in the dining hall, we had these like plexiglass booths that you had to sit in. We had to wear gloves, sanitizer, like just a whole like process just to go get your meal. But ultimately, like the food that they served was all the same. You have like sort of like different cultures. So they have like something for everyone pretty much. So there's just like more food than you could ever imagine. And like 24 hours a day. So you got to be careful a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, in the village, like there was like daily COVID tests, which were kind of a pain in the butt, but like once you got them into your routine, it was pretty good. I mean, I feel like as an athlete, you're probably one of the most tested people out there, probably aside from the healthcare profession. But even at camps like this, like we do daily testing. So a lot of swabs.
Yeah, I think we're getting used to, we're pretty much used to it by now, but still, like, those are the differences, right? But
yeah,
whatever, you know, it's all about the experience and everything you do. And like we talked about traveling and all that stuff. So that's one of the cool things when it comes to the Olympics too, is just the whole, you know, the whole event throughout the couple of weeks that it goes down, just everything that's going on around there, right?
Yeah, I mean, being in the village is just unlike anything else. Like just from the minute you step in, like the way that they put it, like they put it together, you're like, wow. Like you see all the countries, like all the buildings have country names, like everything is just done to the nines, and it's like a whole experience in itself, like village life. And then outside of that, you have like your competitive life. And the biggest difference notable there was just like the no fans, right? Like,
yeah, true.
Being in a full track stadium without anyone,
yeah,
it was almost eerie, but for me, it was good. I think being my first games, I think that would have like obviously really augmented the nerves, because I know I was in Taiwan for a bit and for a competition in 2017, and there was about 90,000 people in the stadium. You could just feel it vibrating. So it really adds like an extra layer to the competition. So for me, like being the first one, already a little nervous.
Yeah.
Without that, it was good.
Yeah, you'll be the opposite, you know, like everyone had the experience before, now you can get the real experience in the latter years, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully 2024, things are back to normal.
The thing about it being pushed back is that you get it that much sooner, you know, it feels like, you know, so before you know it, we're going to be talking about this stuff all over again, right? So, I mean, I can only imagine, obviously, results, not the result you were looking for, at least in, you know, that column, but again, we talked about the experience, and again, you're taking as much out of this experience as possible, I can only imagine.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, competing at the games was uncomparable to anything else. And I mean, you try to go in as prepared as you can to feel the way you're going to feel when you step into kind of that like Olympic competition. And for me, like the closest thing I had to that experience, especially with a lot of shutdown beforehand, was my world championship in 2019 in Qatar. And that games for me, like I felt like a, you know, bird out of, or a fish out of water, just like completely out of my element. I needed a PB to make the final, so I just kind of like that all kind of got to me. So for me, like I had that to draw on, which was a good experience in the sense of like a huge learning curve, but I had been out of like some major competitions for 2 years. So stepping back into that again, I was like, "Ooh, okay, we're here." But it felt better. It felt more like we were on the same page. Like I competed against a lot of the girls through the last 2 years. So getting a little bit more comfortable on the world stage. But yeah, when they say like Olympics, and then it all just all just means a little bit more, right?
Yeah, and that's where you want to be. That's what you want, right? So again, it could be overwhelming, but it's like, this is what I asked for. So whatever,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and so the result definitely wasn't what we wanted. But I did have a second round big foul, which to me was like an exciting peek into the future. It's a part of our sport, like fouling is obviously not something you wish for, but I felt like at least I was able to put a big enough throw out there that I could have made the final. And then that actually really highlighted for me this year, like I think the main difference that I've taken away from the games is I actually practice not fouling in all of my sessions now, and I'm seeing that come out in my meets a lot more. So it was definitely a chronic issue that we didn't have time to address before the games, and now I'm like, next time.
Yeah, and again, it being an individual sport, that's exactly, you know, you're going to take as much out for you, you know, as selfish as it might seem in a team aspect. That's not the mentality, but this case, it is. So since then, you know, as we talked about at the beginning, games wrapped up, and you've just been doing your thing, just training every day and just getting ready for every competition that you have lined up. So what's a normal day like, I guess?
Normal day for me, pretty much wake up, breakfast, and usually go do a training session. So first one of the day is usually a throw. So I usually go do my technical session with my coach, and we throw probably for about an hour, hour and a half, just reps on reps. Whether we're throwing heavy implements, lighter implements, just to work on different parts of the throw. sometimes we're focused on speed, so we'll throw lighter implements. And then if it's a bit more of a strength session, we'll pick like an overweighted implement. And then usually come back, have some lunch, and then do like a strength lift in the afternoon. So something, day to day. Yeah, I'm like day to day changes so much, but usually we do that 5 times a week. So about 10 sessions a week, which isn't too crazy.
I guess so. But hey, that's cool. That's cool stuff to be, you know, doing what you love for a living. Mm-hmm. Right? So I thought I seen that you're also part of the new Canada Track and Field League, right?
Yeah.
Cool, yeah. Because I went back and I couldn't, like, I thought you posted or something. Then I was like, did I dream that? So let's talk about that. That's exciting stuff. And I mean, obviously you're going to be one of the pioneers for Shotfoot.
Yeah, it was really cool. So I actually just learned about it very, very recently. And met with the founder of it just recently on Instagram Live. So we actually got a chance to really talk more in depth about it. But I think it's a really good idea. I think it's something that Canada is really missing. And, you know, as I can say, like growing up when I was like going to all these like local meets in Nova Scotia, they used to have something called the, you know, the NTL, like the National Track League. And it was like this series of meet that this high performance group of athletes went meet to meet to meet. And I was like, oh, so cool. Like there's a league in Canada for track and field other than just kind of like the open meets. And there was like points allocated and prize money and all sorts of stuff. And then it just kind of disappeared. So when I first saw this, it was like, he had posted that Tim Nadeau, Bish, Aaron Brown and Brandon McBride were going to be like ambassadors for it. I was like, okay, what is this? We need to like dive in. And it was really cool. It's this like new program. And it's, I'd say, trying to kind of bring that like team aspect to track and field, which is cool because as we've talked about, it's an individual event, so like you're not really used to having a team to like count on. But I think that will really get people to like buy into like the track and field as a fan base, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's what it needs, right? So the exposure, even just at home, again, kind of allude to what you're saying a little bit too. I mean, it's an individual sport, but you are a team, right? Supporting mm-hmm. each other, doing your own things. But this league, like, I always watch the Olympics and I always say like some of these sports, like what are they doing the other 3-4 years, right? Like, where are they competing? It's just mm-hmm. not out there, right? It's just not exposed and at that level. So this could be, what a lot of people need and a lot of sports need, and we can do it at home.
Yeah. I think that's really missing. I mean, cause yeah, like you said, for us, like we have on the world level, we have like the Diamond League, which I mean has some exposure but isn't widely known to like the fan base, right? Like
yeah.
You have to really be a trackie to like put on the live stream for a Diamond League.
Yeah.
or like the one below it is like the Continental Tours, and you really have to like be in the world if you want to find those links. But so I think yeah, what's missing is kind of like that national level league. Like we have them from almost, you know, a lot of our other sports. I won't say all because I probably would be overgeneralizing. Yeah, there's so many. But yeah, I think it's really missing. And I'm hoping that this really fills the void and that a lot of like the Canadian athletes will buy into it. Like,
yeah,
because as like the inaugural year, I think it's really important that, you know, as leaders in Canadian track and field, that we step up and also take it on. Because I think, you know, if you can leave the sport better than when you started, then I think that's all that you can really ask for.
And that's what it's going to take. I mean, like, again, if we had like a national league and we had a Canada league, Ontario, provincial, everything, everyone does a little bit to make it grow, it'll grow even bigger, right? Just like everything else. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting that, you know, this it's still really new. It's still just, you know, getting off the ground, but you're going to be part of it. So I definitely wanted to bring that up. And I just want to thank you for coming on and, you know, telling your story and chatting with me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This was really cool. A lot of questions and stuff that I don't usually get. So that was good.
So I did well. Cool.
Yeah, you did really well.
Thanks a lot.
Huge thanks to Sarah Mitten for coming on the show, chatting with me, talking about her career and the future of the sport, track and field in Canada, starting their own league, I guess, for now. It's an interesting thing, yeah, something that can be done, maybe should be done, and just give those athletes a place to compete and, you know, It could be a win-win with for everyone when it comes to sponsors, advertisements, and just growing sport here in Canada and in Ontario, you know, too. So cool stuff, again, to have some Windsor alumni, obviously not necessarily from Windsor, but some Windsor alumni in the Olympics again. Again, talking about the longevity of the sport, I'm sure she'll be back. So, you know, it'll be cool to you know, have that Windsor pride, that Windsor Lancer pride representing, you know, our team here in Windsor Track and Field for many years and at the grandest stage of them all at the Olympics. So, and as you heard in that conversation with Sarah, talking about that East Coast lifestyle swag, of course, we got to bring that up here before we get into some news here for the rest of the podcast. EastCoastLifestyle.com, you can get 20% off right now by using our code WINCITY20. That's WINCITY20. Give you 20% off some of the best gear, best colors, best swag. And of course, if you're from out there representing the East Coast, and if you're not, like me, doesn't matter. Still cool stuff, great material, comfy as can be. And again, like I said, some cool colors. And they have a new partnership with Bauer Hockey to do some Bauer Hockey / East Coast Lifestyle collabs. So get some Bauer gear with the East Coast Lifestyle swag or logo, better yet, and use our code to get 20% off now, WINCITY20 on EastCoastLifestyle.com. Cool stuff. Thanks again to Sarah for coming on and chatting with me, and all the best in the future. But we do want to talk about some other sports here on the WINCITY Sports Podcast today. I guess we'll start with our Windsor Express. Some tough competition for the Express in the NBL of Canada, of course, playing some games with the TBL this year, but when they're matched up against some of these NBL teams, it can be hard. I don't think they have a win over any NBL team yet. And of course, when they get matched up, for instance, yesterday and twice, I believe, in the last week, as we'll talk about, against the undefeated 10-0 London Lightning. Good luck with that. So the Windsor Express so far, 2-7, picking up two wins over the TBL teams and the Kokomo Bobcats and the Dayton Flight, which is the last game I was able to call. We'll get into that in a little bit, but we'll be back. Anyway, in the last week, we had a few games, losing to the Sudbury 5, 123-119 last Sunday. March 25th on Thursday, we had a game in Kitchener, Waterloo, losing 99-84, and then a close one yesterday, 110-103 against the top team in the league, the undefeated London Lightning. They actually have another game today on the road against the Kitchener-Waterloo Titans. You can watch on NBL.TV if you're a subscriber. But coming this Friday, April 1st, April Fool's Day, we'll have the Fools back at the WSU Center for a matchup. 7 p.m., Kitchener-Waterloo Titans versus our Windsor Express, and I will be back calling the game for the first time in a little bit. From there, they'll have an away game on Sunday in Lansing against the Lansing Pharaohs of the TBL, and then heading up to Kitchener-Waterloo next Tuesday. The following home game will be April the 6th, Wednesday, against the Sudbury 5. The St. Clair Saints men's basketball team has another silver medal to add to their collection after winning silver in the provincial championship. They punched their ticket to the finals, taking on Humber again, this time at the national level of Canadian colleges basketball, men's basketball, losing to Humber 101-94, a close battle, coming from behind throughout the game to try and come back and take the lead. Just wasn't enough, not enough time to do this one. But again, another accolade for our men's basketball team over at St. Clair College that went 7-2 this year, nearly undefeated, just like our women's team went undefeated. Now silver medalist, both provincial and national level. Some other kind of cool news that we missed too is at the beginning of the year, we had Liam LeClaire on the show. He's a local lacrosse player playing for the Calgary Roughnecks of the NLL. And a few weeks back, we actually had him on the show, and he talked about how his brother played for in the NLL as well. For whatever reason, decided to step away from the game. And he decided to step back into the game. So now we have both LeClaire brothers playing professionally, professional lacrosse at the highest level in the NLL, at least for box lacrosse. Playing on the same team, too, in Calgary, in the Calgary Roughnecks. So pretty cool stuff to have a pair of brothers in the NLL. We always talk about our local athletes in the major sports, and we can't forget that we have a few in the NLL. Brett Hickey recently traded as well. I forget where he went, but another guy from Windsor who is at that rank of professional lacrosse. And speaking of recent signings, Michael Mulder is back in the NBA and NBA G League with a two-way contract with the Miami Heat and the Miami Force, or wherever they play out of. That's their minor team. He has history of playing with them before and was signed to them before. His first pro contract, NBA contract, was with the Heat, where he played for the Sky Force in the NBA G League before going over to the Golden State Warriors when they needed some help. They released him earlier this year. He played last year a lot with Steph Curry's injury and stuff like that, but this year didn't make the lineup too much, and he was released from his contract, and he has landed back on his feet with his old team in the Miami Heat. Meanwhile, while this is all going on, and MLB training camp finally kicked off after the potential lockout and pushing things back a few weeks. But Windsor's Jacob Robson is a non-roster invitee to the Tigers spring training, playing games, and making some heads turn, I guess. So we'll see if he makes the cut and if he will get his second chance to continue his dream of playing in the NBL, at least for the MLB. At least for the Detroit Tigers, his team growing up just across the border. We had him on the show a long time ago, episode 123 of Wind City Sports, but I love it. That's a good episode to go back and listen to. Lots in the archives that you can go back and listen to. As if you enjoyed this one, there's a lot more out there. And that is it this week on the Wind City Sports Podcast. My name is Drake DeMore, and I'm here every week to talk about local sports news and bring you an interview with local athlete, coach, entrepreneur, and more. Next week, we'll probably talk a little bit more about Junior C and Junior B playoffs that are going on right now, as well as get you caught up with the Spitfires and everything else. You can catch us on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere podcasts are found. Follow us on social media at WinCity_sports on every social media platform you can think of. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it may be. Give us a review on any app you might use. And tell your friends and family, teammates, and training partners about the Wind City Sports Podcast. Until next time, smell you later.